true, that spiritual, actual, factual answers to questions he asking. You find them inside you, beside you, reciting the records of Kashuk. We laughing, we drafting the passion through fabric. It's time for that comedy, dramedy, all of the fanciest, catchiest acronyms. Listeners, listen, we traveling. Consciousness is always unraveling. The reading you're having is mapping you back to your natural habitat. Abracadabra, it's magic, let's pass it. To top it off, the host are the classiest. Now, what were you asking for? All of the answers, what? All the answers.
All right, are we recording?
Yes.
Yeah.
We are?
Check. This is me saying check. Dick check.
Welcome to Houston's Mr. Dick Check.
Mr. Dick
Your
Check.
Your table is ready, Mr. Dick Check.
Well, Katie, we're back in the studio.
Here we are.
Here we are in live. It's a different thing. I don't know if I can talk to you.
I don't like looking over there. I'm going to look at you over there.
Okay, you can talk to me on the screen right there. That sounds great.
I can't be bothered to turn my head.
Yeah, that's going to get exhausting.
What am I, some kind of person? All right, here's where I wanted to start today. First of all, I sound like three robots in my own ears.
Okay.
There's three robots of me talking.
Cool, cool.
I'm just letting...
Take one out.
The audience know what I hear in my own head. Oh, that is better. Take an ear out and then fuck your glasses up.
I mean, really, we don't need them until our guest comes on, really.
The headphones?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Fuck these
things. And let me know, too. I can adjust your headphone volume.
Okay.
As well. Oh, okay.
We'll let you know.
So I'm going to talk to you there because I'm lazy.
Okay.
Just so you know, you can look at my ear, though, if you want.
It's a nice ear, Katie.
Thanks.
I got to tell you.
Whisper right into it. All right. So I want to tell the listeners, we did improv together yesterday, like on our feet, in person, in San Francisco with other human mammals.
Yeah, a bunch.
It was a delight for me.
Yeah, it was fun.
That was a ton of fun. Like a lot of pros who've been around a long time, like getting back into it, kind of fucking around.
Yeah.
Curated by the great Sam Shaw. And what I want the listener to know, I'm gonna blow your head up real big for a second. I want the audience to know, I forget sometimes, Cassidy Jamal Brown is not only a funny improviser, he's very smart and he is really good at, like, there are certain things you can do in improv that make improv work better for the whole team.
Right.
And just make it work. There's just like tips for the trade, how you do it. There's a structure, there are tools. You make your partner look good. You make offers. You raise the stakes. There's all kinds of things you can do. And you just did it every time, all the time. And it felt to me when I was watching you like watching someone who has deeply internalized like the bones and the best parts of what make improv work well. I was just really like, that fucking guy is good at that shit.
That means the world to me. And I'm not kidding. Like I get a little lumpy.
I love it.
That's it. I was talking with Chris, one of the people that we were improvising with yesterday, who I've been working with in improv for 100 years. And I was noting those people that I think of as generous improvisers.
Yeah.
And there's a guy who wasn't even there. I haven't worked with him for years. But whenever I think of the idea of like the best generous improvisers, it's this guy, Ed Meehan. So I'm just going to say his name because I love him.
Sure.
And it's that thing of like he bumps he's always bumping the volleyball.
He's bumping the volleyball.
You know, he's not serving it. He's not spiking it. He is bumping it.
That's so good.
That bumping is super important. You got to set up things to happen.
Yeah.
Keep it moving. Keep it forwarding. And so
I feel weird that I'm looking at you.
Okay,
there.
I'm going to look at you here.
Do you mind?
No,
just
not at all.
I'm like, this makes
we're getting
any
used
kind
to a new
sense.
Method yeah. of. We are in the studio here with Desmond.
First of all. Secondly, we're trying to make video so that we can have TikTok content.
Welcome to the 21st century.
Except that look at us. This looks like...
Whatever, we're fine.
This looks like your grandma was like, and how do you make the TikTok?
Well, that's because I wore this shirt that's so busy.
No, like, it's the lighting and the framing. We're working it out. But I'm saying eventually we can have it be cool and pretty and whatever
good.
The hell.
It's gorgeous.
Anyway, you're a great fucking improviser. And I don't know, were you going to say that guy as a generous thing, that's what you aim to be?
Yeah, I think I was just sort of, I'm hoping, like I'm hearing that as being a generous improviser, which that's a term that I have
in
my head. And maybe that's not what you're saying.
What I'm saying, Cassidy over there.
Shit, you're right there.
is you're funny. A lot of the choices you make are just funny. And that's important in comedy improv. But also intelligent and also aware of what's going to move the scene forward well, which is generous to the other improvisers. But it's more artfully cognizant of what's going to work well for the improv to work well. Like it was less like, look at him lobbing everything up for everyone else. More like, He lobbed it when it needed to be lobbed. He took it when he needed to take it. He spiked it when it needed to be spiked. I was just like, there's a master doing this master thing.
Thank you.
Seriously.
There's nothing else to say, but thank you. That is about as high a compliment as I can receive, especially from someone who is one of the funniest people I know.
Get out.
And really understands the craft of comedy very deeply.
Aww.
So we're just going to sit here and stroke each other off a little bit. Just that's going on TikTok.
Let's do it again.
For the listener, we just mock...
Co-masturbated each other. Oh my God. Yeah. So that was really, really fun. I mean, everybody there at this particular group, I thought was a solid ass improviser who we could do improv with.
Except for one. And I'm not going to say who.
Nobody's name.
Just one. Just you decide.
Her name. I mean,
their name.
No, nobody's name. That nobody was. No. It was just great. And I was just like, we could all just keep doing this a long time. And it went well. And I just thought, well, look at Cassidy murdering it.
Thank you.
Yeah, so that's a thing.
I was glad that we got to do at least one bit together, our psycho scene. And again, it's same thing where I felt like we were able to just drop into those moments and be like, you're going to throw a thing at me and I'm going to throw it back at you. And then you're going to throw it back at me and we're going to match energy and we're going to meet each other where we are.
Yes. And we heard each other. I really saw that. Like we both were like, because we both can be so alpha. Sometimes it's nice if you have an alpha and a beta in a scene.
Mm-hmm.
But we like... Alpha, listen, alpha, listen, alpha, listen. I love that.
Yeah.
It's like it works. It works.
It was a joy.
It was a joy.
And then we went to a pub afterwards.
Yeah.
And we're sitting down and the woman comes around. She's saying, it's trivia night. We're going to play trivia, which we didn't end up doing because it was too loud and we were too loud. And never mind. We were somewhere else in the restaurant anyway. But then she goes, wait, I know you guys. And it's this person who... This is synchronicity.
We're talking about the lady who waited on us.
No, the lady who gave us the slips and then ran the...
Oh, ran the trivia.
Ran the trivia.
My bad.
So where Sam and I first met was through the San Francisco Improv Cooperative, and they would have these jams, and there was sort of an ongoing little community that was really active for a little while, way back in the aughts.
Okay.
And she was... I don't think she was an improviser so much as just was always there. She was a fan.
A fan, yeah.
And a friend of us, and was very present at that time.
Huh.
And then left for LA and has been gone for a long time. Haven't seen her forever. And then we reunite all these people, also a bunch of these people from long ago.
Wow.
For this one-time jam or ongoing jam, hopefully.
And there's like this woman.
Bryce, and like he's from way back then also. Yeah. And then this woman is at the pub for our reunion as if to join our reunion.
So wild.
So crazy.
Liz wild.
Edelman, shout out to you and whatever pub trivia you're running. If I could plug it, I would, but I can't. Liz Edelman's trivia.
If I could pub it, I would.
If I could pub it.
I want to also shout you out for Cassidy. I can attest for the listener, really sticking to his psychic lady food plan.
Yep.
Because we went out and he had an Arnold Palmer, which we enjoyed talking about the pronunciation of. No beer ski.
I did have a patty melt, which had rye bread. So I did have a little bit of gluten.
Rye bread.
Bread. So a little bread, but rye I did bread. Avoid the beers.
Hey, man, I give you a ton of credit for that. You and Rami. Rami's murdering it with their food plan.
Yeah.
Holy, oh my God. Have you seen Rami's face? They look like
I haven't seen Rami's face for a while, I feel like.
Fair enough.
It's been too long.
I mean, Rami, I would have said to you, there's nothing on Rami that could be lost in terms of weight or pounds. I'd be like, Rami's just like a fit ass motherfucker. Well, now they look like a fucking gymnast. They just, all this weight just went off of where it wasn't before.
You know where it left me?
Where?
My legs.
That's so annoying.
That's so annoying.
That's the annoyingest thing. I want it to leave right here. Can it leave my jowls?
Right. I'm like, I know where I want it to go.
And this.
Nope. My legs, I like my legs.
Jowls,
yeah,
belly.
It doesn't go from where you want it to go.
See,
someone
mine
else I
does.
Know it left their boobs first. And they're like, that's the one place I don't want it to leave.
That's annoying. What I am lucky if I actually ever am fucking disciplined, which I never fucking am ever, it leaves like proportionally from everywhere all at the same time. So I shouldn't complain. I should just show up and be a person and eat well. But fuck
there's
that
this
noise.
Thing is targeted weight loss. I think it's a lie.
I think so, too. I think everybody's different. It happens where it happens.
And I need to, like, do fucking sit-ups and do some exercise. That's the one thing I haven't added to that.
All right. Have I told you about my Orange Theory obsession? Have we talked about that on here?
We talked about Orange Theory and you described the process.
Yeah.
Because well, I thought it was weird that it was called Orange Theory.
Yeah, it's a funny thing. I've transferred it to California. It's, of course, like almost twice as expensive. Not really. It's $40 more a month, which is a lot. That's like it's $99 a month for 8 classes in Florida, $140 for 8 classes for a month here. So I'm cranking
that's $140 bucks a month. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a chunk.
That's a chunk of change.
I'm living with someone now, so rent is way better for me. And I'm basically paying for a storage unit. So I'm like, all right, I'll pay for my freaking Orange Theory and like whatever.
Nice.
We also saw some comedy sports, you and I.
We did. We went down and saw some short form improv.
Down
a whole
in...
bunch of very, very, very ultra gamified short form improv.
Short form. They all wear matching outfits and it's a competition and it's a fun little structure. And
they got a guy with a remote control whistle.
That was funny.
It's a little button thing that he holds in his hand and it's like blowing a whistle.
I am so sorry, Des. I'm hot as hell. Any way we could do anything?
That
about
fan
it?
Is blowing. But
I know.
It's not
I feel
doing
it hitting me, but very gently.
Maybe we could stop it from oscillating and just point it directly at you.
I also foolishly wore this is like a sweater, short sleeve sweater.
That was a
you
mistake.
You could slide that window open a little more, Cass.
That's great already, I think. Oh, yeah, that's even, I feel a fan
is
now.
That hitting,
yeah? Yeah, thanks, okay. Man. Appreciate it. Okay, so there's that. The two things I could talk about are like living with another human.
Yeah.
Whoa.
It's a whole thing.
Wow. Or this whole other side business I've started that seems to be, I have a whole new career. So now I have three. Where do you want to go, Cass?
You have all of the things. Let me just say, we have a guest today. So we're going to be talking about a guest.
Yep.
A guest who was booked by our new booker.
Oh, yeah. We have to talk about that.
Sophia. Who you will hear from a week from this episode.
Yep. Sophia was the guest.
Don't
again.
Get too confused, but you will hear Sophia a
she's
week from now.
She's also a retread. She was with us before.
Yep.
Right?
That's how she's a friend of the podcast and just started working with us. So she is booking our guests, which is very exciting.
So cool. Well, to be even more, let's blow her up a bunch because she deserves it. Like out of nowhere came to us and said, I'd like to help you guys. I'd like to help you with things. And then we had a chat about, well, what things do we actually need help with?
Yeah.
And then we all three met. And so what landed on the table was she's going to help get people here. And she's helping me with Leslie, who helped. Leslie's my assistant for my healing business. And so the three of us are going to work together a bit to figure out more stuff about TikTok.
What is this TikTok thing that the kids are doing today?
Grandma and grandpa need to get on TikTok. Anyway, so just shout out Sophia Fredericks, because thank you for offering your everything. And then she like followed up with us and was like, you know, don't forget you have Adrian today and leave room for a song if you can, which I would have 100% not remembered
to do.
We're
slowly dialing this whole professionalism thing in. I mean, it started with Desmond, obviously, actually having someone edit and produce our stuff.
Yeah, how about that?
I don't know where we'd be.
No, we'd be on the streets. We'd be sucking dick on the street for cash. Being like, I have spiritual wisdom.
Sucking dick for editing services. Desmond, did you know you could have gotten that?
That's a new deal that we're starting now. We'll suck your dick for a couple.
Go ahead, chime in.
GarageBand, dick suck for some GarageBand work.
I'm definitely going to have to put that on my website.
A payment, $140 an hour.
Cash, PayPal, or fellatio.
Yeah, there you go.
$1 per recorded minute or fellatio.
Yeah. Have you ever had any sex for money?
No.
Or paid money for any sex?
Nope. I shouldn't have said that with such judgment.
I know.
Just literally no. I've
gotten
not.
Paid for stripping.
Have you?
Yeah.
Okay, say more
ding
words now.
Ditch.
So I was working as a prep cook in high school, and one of the waitresses was having her bachelorette party, and I was making her nachos. And
I think she said I was making her nauseous.
I
was going to make her nauseous later.
When
I was just
stripped.
Making her nachos now. And I laughingly said to the kitchen manager, should I take these out in my underwear? And he goes, I'll give you $20. And then we realized I couldn't walk through the entire restaurant to where the bachelor party was in my underwear. So I went back with the nachos. I set the nachos down. I sat on her lap and started stripping, stood up, finished the strip tease all the way down to the boxers. And that's when I looked up and remembered the dart tournament going on in the other room. So they saw it too. And I got the $20 from my kitchen manager, and I got like another 30 or 40 tips from the bachelorette party.
So listeners, the lesson of the day is take your fucking pants off more and people will give you cash. What are you guys doing? Just laying around your houses with your pants on, listening to us say words at
we
you?
We got options.
Take your pants off, America.
There's money to be made.
Wow. I love that, Des. I have I told you my sex for money story? Have I told you my sexual encounter? I'm going to tell the world right now a terrifyingly embarrassing story.
Do it.
I can't believe we haven't talked about this.
No. Now, we probably won't get to your new business
that's
and stuff
fine.
Because
we got
of this.
Time.
This is more important.
This is way more important.
Yeah.
All right. Context is not useful. I was living in Los Angeles and I was a little wilder then. And I had a friend. I had like 5 or 6 friends. This was in my access consciousness days. People in access consciousness are very open to lots of different kinds of exchanges. Okay. And there's like a way that in access, there's a lot of talk about not being in judgment of anything ever, including like, go ahead and fuck people for money. Like, it's not a problem.
Okay.
Which of course, like, in the abstract, I agree with. I don't judge people who wind up in that situation or choose it or whatever. But, and it's not a thing I actually want to choose for myself. But at right. the time, I was exploring, well, if I lived with no judgment, like I could do this and I could do that. And so I was like, let's try all the shit.
Yep.
So one of the things I did was I was on a bunch of people I knew, like a bunch of people were getting sugar daddied. In various ways.
Okay.
Through a particular website that is designed to set sugar daddies up with lady people. Mm-hmm. Like dudes with money. And it was in this particular site, for whatever reason, it was pretty binary. It was like men
sure,
with money
pretty much
paying women.
I imagine what that world looks like mostly.
I wonder. There's got to be like a gender bending.
Well, there's probably a gay sugar daddy situation for
I'm
men.
Sure.
I
don't you think there'd be like a non-binary sugar daddy situation?
Maybe, eventually.
Anyway, I knew a girl who her full life was paid for and she lived in a 10-story condo, 360-degree view of Houston, paid for by her sugar daddy. I knew people who got like gifts every day of the week mailed to them, all kinds of shit. So I was like, well, fuck, I want somebody to just pay for my life. Let's try this. I got no judgment. I can be open-minded. So I get on this site and the only offer I get, I can't remember how long I was on it or what I tried for. A guy offered to pay me $600 if I would let him suck my toes.
That's easy.
Right?
It's not very invasive.
NBD, right? Except dun, 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 just wait for it. We agree to meet at like a Starbucks. He's like, let's make you feel safe. We'll meet at this Starbucks. This is again, Southern California. I will take out my evaluative statements and just describe this gentleman for you with the most just neutral, descriptive words that I can do my best to use. This gentleman happened to be 4'8", maybe.
Okay.
Maybe 9. Okay. His hair that was curly and black, and I'm talking about kinky, curly, like, but like fried with mats in it, not dreads, mats, mm-hmm. like a dog that you've never brushed.
Sure.
But it was had mats in it and parts of it had fallen out. So his skull, like his head was revealed, like
okay.
chunks of hair missing. And it was greasy, like okay. real, real greasy, curly, matted, chunks missing, greasy, big and puffy, but also long. So
okay.
it was like puffed up, but also long. And somehow the longness of the hair bled into a beard, like a ZZ Top, greasy, chunks missing out of it, matted beard.
Okay.
So he was just hair beard down to like his waist. I legitimately couldn't see much of his face. It was like sort of little eyes behind like a wall. It was like Cousin It.
And you, wait, I think I might have missed the detail. He connects you through the website and
yes.
offered you this through
correct.
The website. Okay.
Yes. So I'd never seen a picture of him. There were no pictures. So we meet at the Starbucks and Cousin It, but black haired, greasy haired, hair missing, matted Cousin It meets me at Starbucks. And I'm like, uh-oh. Because I was hoping to be like at least a tiny bit attracted to
right.
the person who's about to suck my toes in a private room that I'd never met for money. No, I was not. Let's just say that much. I still agree to go forward with it because now I just have to know what's going to happen because I can be that kind of person.
Sure.
Where I'm like, how's this going to... I didn't feel...
I'm probably going to have a podcast in 20 years. I'm probably going to want to tell this story.
I didn't. Oh, she's here, but we'll wait. I didn't feel afraid of him. So I was like, let's go for it. What time is it?
It's time.
Oh, it's time. Okay. Well, the shortest version of the story is I follow him to his house, which I think is his house. No, it's his mom's house. We open the door. His mom is in, and we were in our 30s, like probably early to mid 30s. His mom is in the living room on the couch. And I don't know how to say this a way that is good. His mom happened to be, I'm going to say, about 550 pounds.
Okay.
Now, okay, that's fine. But add the image of that to the floor. It was a wood floor, right? Every other wood panel was missing. So there's a very morbidly obese, not healthy looking woman in a shirt with stains sitting on a couch that is tilted under her that looks like it's about to fall through the floorboards because every other floorboard was missing so that you could see the foundation of the house through the boards of the floor. So you had to walk over every other, yeah. Okay.
Did she show you cash up front for this? Because you're wondering if there's money now.
Excellent question. He paid me half of it at Starbucks.
Okay.
And said, let's go to the house. And once we're done with this endeavor, I'll give you the other half. This is real. Thank you, Desmond, for your reaction. Cassidy's being very neutral. Desmond, I wish you could see.
My eyes are wide. You can't see behind my glasses.
Cassidy looks like he might be on TikTok soon and doesn't want to be seen going,
yeah.
No, I'm just like,
yeah. I'm off screen. So.
Desmond,
go,
looks
bring it on.
Like, appropriately horrified.
I am out of the judgment free zone.
Okay.
That's it. I'm trying to be like, okay, that's the life they're living.
I know.
I hear you. Thank you for describing it.
The bedroom, still every other floorboard, or like every third, it's fucked up. I sit on the edge of the bed and he's like, I'm just going to go into the bathroom for a minute. I don't know what he does in there. I sit on the edge of the bed, I lay back, and he starts to go to town on my toes.
Okay.
Okay. There was a couple different times. This was a guy obsessed with ladies' toes, so I figured he had like toe protocol, and he knew what he was doing. Toe-to-call. This guy should know what he's doing. Well, maybe part of his toe-to-call was about every 2 minutes into the toe sucking, he would get up, stop, go into the bathroom, and hawk a loogie into the sink. And I'd hear him spit the whole thing out.
This is a terrible story.
Yeah.
It's actually an excellent story.
I mean, it's horrifying. Your face is correct, Desmond. This happened for a while. He was done.
5 minutes, 20 minutes?
20 minutes.
Did you agree on a time limit before?
That's a good question. No, I was young and stupid.
Okay.
Long story long, he finishes. There was nothing sexual about it. He didn't come. He wasn't groaning. He just like did his thing. And then he was like, all right, well, thanks so much. Handed me the rest of the money. And I walked out.
Watch your step on the way out.
Watched my step on the way out. Said goodbye to his mom, who was in the next room the whole time. And left and never did anything like that again in my life. And felt sick for about a week.
Wow.
This was before the trauma healing, guys.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm real curious if this is going to come back up.
I was literally just thinking that. I was like, I can't wait to see how this comes up in our conversation with this innocent human, Adrian,
who has
joining
no
us.
Idea what she's in for.
Okay, now, I want to talk more about that in the future, like maybe not in this episode, but we have to put a pin in this because of sexual abuse history stuff and the connection between that and a person making a choice like this. And I'm talking about me.
Okay.
Okay, so there's a lot to be said there, and I hope I didn't just traumatize all the listeners. You're welcome. I definitely traumatized Cassidy. Look at his face. Now he's
I'm
reacting appropriately.
I'm
you should
stuck.
Be.
Bring her in.
Bring her in.
All right, here we go.
We're shifting gears.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
What if Adrian's just a flower?
Yes.
Adrian, how's it going?
Yeah, I'm good. I want to say hi to you. And I also want to know how I should mic myself.
You have any thoughts about that, Desmond?
How's our...
What do you... have
I have this mic. I can also record it like to GarageBand and then send you an audio file.
If you have the ability to record locally easily onto GarageBand, that would be fantastic.
Yeah,
if you can set that up in just a minute.
Totally, it'll just take me like a few minutes.
Well, I'm not gonna ask you stuff yet until you're set up, just FYI. So it's gonna be awkwardly us just staring at you now.
Okay. Awesome. I love awkward, not knowing how to...
We'll cut this part out. Don't worry.
Hey, what's up? This is Rami. I am in the Twin Cities in Minnesota. It's lovely here. I went to Paisley Park, which, if you don't know, is where Prince lived and created and is now a museum of Prince and, you know, a mecca, I guess, for it's the Graceland for Prince. And it was pretty great. There was an exhibit currently happening of his custom shoes. He's got like, oh, he had like over 3,000 custom high heels. Turns out they're all kind of the exact same shoe with just different fabric on it, in case you were wondering. He's like, I know what I need. This is what I need. Now make it look different, but the same. You know. Okay, Rami's rules.
Hi, I feel better. Do you feel good?
Yep, great. I do. Camera, phone's down. We are back.
My name's Adrian. It's nice to meet you guys.
Nice to meet you as well. So you're a friend of Sophia's, is that right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We're really good pals, really good.
That's Katie and I'm Cassidy, in case we didn't follow up.
Katie and Cassidy, yes.
And so how did you guys meet? What's your history with her?
I met Sophia. We were in a workshop at the Berkeley Rep together. We did the Moby Dick, Dave Malloy workshop.
Right.
And that's how we met.
Uh-huh. Yes. I feel like I know people in various states across the country involved in that workshop.
Another person we're going to have next week.
And two others I can think of.
Next week's guest.
Everyone
was also
I know
involved.
Was in that workshop or involved with that production later.
Did you do the production out east?
I didn't. It was like, that's a whole long story. It was really fun. I'm not acting professionally is not my life path at this time in my life. And while they were doing that workshop there, I played a character that they hadn't really fully like conceived yet. And it got a little weird. And then they just totally redid the character, like as a completely different concept, which was really cool. And it was really fun to be a part of it. And I met Sophia and I met Dawn Troop Massey.
One of my favorites. No, but we should get her on the podcast. You just reminded me.
Oh, yeah.
I'm madly in love with Dawn Troop Massey. Always have been.
Me too. And we are writing a musical together for the last few years. So that's like, yeah, she's just, that was like such a huge, huge thing for me because Sophia is such a huge part of my life and my friend circle and my, you know, she's just, we're so deeply connected. And,
oh, that's great.
Yeah. So that worked out really.
And so you're up here in Northern California, right?
I'm in El Cerrito.
Okay.
Yes.
Got it. Yeah. And so because I usually start this way with most people who come on this particular podcast, are you open to sharing with us? Like what, if I say the word spirituality to you, what does that mean to you? Like what's your relationship with that?
Yeah. I mean, I cannot overstate how spiritually oriented I am. It is like, that's really all I have cooking, honestly. I like everything is that through the lens of my spiritual path and journey, like that's how I view everything. And I've been like that since I was a child and I've been on my own journey through the world as a spiritual being, just navigating everything. And I don't even know where to begin, baby. But yeah.
Okay. And so how did you start? Were you like raised in a tradition? Did you find your own tradition? Are you traditionless? Like how did it start?
When my mom was pregnant with me, I was the third child. She had these really intense dreams of like what she, you know, sort of put together later was the memory of a past life. And my entire childhood was sort of, you know, my mom. Oh, someone's microphone is farting in my ear.
Yeah, we're all hearing that.
That's a fun noise.
That is yours.
I don't, it's me? Oh, I don't know.
I am enjoying that sound.
Are you?
Yeah.
Sounds like luscious? A good release.
Is that your spiritual release?
she's ascending. She's ascending right
what
now.
What the hell? Okay, it's gone.
It's like a soul fart.
Did you ascend? Did you merge into the oneness?
Wait, turn on your camera. Are you still there?
I merged in that I Oh, now I'm like echoing. No, I think I'm okay. I don't know. I think sometimes, yeah, God likes to fart.
Hi, Diesel's here.
Yeah, you
hi, are Diesel. Still here. Hello.
I think you're okay for now. Hold on, we got to get the dog
There's
out. The dog just pushed into the
Diesel.
Studio.
Oh,
it's madness. It's absolute chaos. Thank you for being as patient as you are with us, all of us.
Who,
we're,
me?
We're all being
She's
patient.
Fine. Everybody's fine. Being
patient.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that spiritually. So there's oftentimes, we're still recording, right?
Unfortunately.
Nothing unfortunate about it.
Sorry for future Desmond who's editing this.
So oftentimes there can be, you know, I don't know. Oftentimes it's like, so I don't know how much you know about us, Adrian, but
I know like pretty little about you, but I did listen to the episode that you did with Sophia. What should I do? Should I use a different? I've never encountered this before.
This is a comedy joke from the beyond is what this is. It's a fart. It's God is farting on us.
May God fart on you. May you feel the air, the wind of the divine upon your face. It will cleanse you of all of your issues. I have no solutions. I've never experienced this before.
It's a different version of what happened on our episode entitled Demon Breath.
Well, I'm trying to say this these words. Okay, tiny bit of background. One, I'm an energy healer. I've been an energy healer for 25 million years. KatieRubin.com, go to it. That's what we do. We have people come on here. We talk to them about spirituality. This guy and I are funny all the time. We do improv together. I'm also a stand-up comic. So we do funniness and spirituality together. Each guest that we have, we chat with them a little bit. Then we open their Akashic records if they want that and answer any questions they may have through my channel of all the things. And then if you want healing, it comes through and we do some healing. That's the whole shape of the podcast in 4 seconds. Yes. So welcome here to that. You're a lady who's spiritual. Yes. Now you have context.
And funny. I am also funny.
Fantastic. That works out great for all of us. Now, I also have to say the universe is clearly funny because your computer is farting at us. And I need to say something that happens regularly in healing sessions with clients, like if I'm teaching a class or working with individual people and there's resistance in the field, which can be any form of resistance. It can be an unintegrated part of self doesn't want to do the healing work today, or the darkness doesn't want more light in the space, or entities that are against the positive entities that are coming in, or blah. There will be weird technical shit that happens. It happens all the time. It's a very common thing I deal with as an energy healer. Never before, however, have I had the universe fart at us as a way of being some kind of interference. But I wonder if it's interference or if it's comedy. It's just comedy fun times.
I don't think it's interference. I think it's because my relationship with God and the divine is very funny to God. I think I am a joke to God in a nice way, not in a self-deprecating way.
Tell us more about that.
I have such a great time imagining that my foibles and my intentional attempts at being funny could be in any way entertaining to the divine.
How does that show up in a regular day?
Such an excellent question. I've never really ever been asked or thought about how to answer. I feel like in a regular day, I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of just a jokester. I'm always like trying to make people laugh. But I think like when I really notice this is when things are really like crashing in on themselves and going really rough. And then I like find myself all a mess. And I'm trying to, you know, one of my like life archetypes that I kind of have painted on myself, I guess, or maybe came into this life with is like just trying to like keep it together and be really strong and really be a badass and really be like fucking ahead of the everything. Like I'm really feel like I'm like a warrior, soldier, like general. And the reality of who I am is that I'm like goofy, messy, super disorganized, major ADHD, like just a total artist, creative, hate conflict, love everyone, and
farts.
Then I will fall apart and somebody farts. And it's like a joke. And it's like, I'll realize like,
farts,
oh, right.
Farts, 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 farts. Farts.
If nothing else, we are slaying Desmond in the corner. He is having
also,
the time of his life.
Also, we're
going to
have a lot of great polls for TikTok today. Great little poll segments.
Thanks.
No problem at all.
Farts. All right, and we're back.
All right, so great.
I feel like that basically answered the question.
I think so. I think that's right.
God was like, you're saying too much. Just let me show you another fart.
Were you always a musician, or how did you get to that?
I was always a musician. I mean, you know, I started singing and writing songs when I was a little kid. I played piano. I definitely didn't like piano lessons very much, but you know, that was like kind of what got me in musically. And then I started playing guitar when I was like 12, and I started taking lessons when I was 14, and I've just been singer songwriter, you know, you did that. I like would make CDs when I was in high school and college, and you know, and just, I started getting into, yeah, like wanting to be a professional musician at a pretty young age. And just like that thing that I described that I think is a funny foible of my life of like trying really, really hard to sort of do something in a way that wasn't, damn it, the fucking fart. Should I like unplug my shit, or should we just allow the farts to be a part of the podcast? Is that, it's up to you guys, whatever.
Desmond, what do you think?
Try disconnecting and reconnecting.
Oh, you
it.
Do that?
We'll try it once.
I have to get out of here. I'm so hot.
I'm so sorry. Got windows open and fans on.
We're going to do a real quick reset, and Katie's going to get less hot.
I'm like losing.
Feel free to just leave that. We'll just let the dogs come in. And
we didn't realize how hot it was going to be in the studio today.
I know. It's not that hot of a day. So I was like, oh, it'll be warm. But
Adrian, you should know we've been doing this for 4 years now. We have got it dialed in. We are professionals. And also God farts on us sometimes. So it's one of those days.
I could try another mic. Maybe it's the microphone.
Here, unplug the mic and see if it stops. Yep. Can you hear me? It stopped immediately as soon as you unplugged it. Now we just have you on computer mic. I think we should just have this conversation with you on the computer, maybe. It's probably fine.
Yeah. If I'm not, like, I wish it could be better audio for you guys, but I feel like if you...
Desmond's just over here cracking up about everything.
I knew this was going to be a little trial and error, but this has exceeded all of my expectations of falling apart.
That's cool.
I think we go with computer mic.
But it's workable for you?
It's... None of this is ideal anymore, but it's better than me cranking up your mic and picking up Cassidy too much.
Oh, hi, Adrian. What's up?
Hey, welcome. What's your relationship to spirituality?
Oh, my God. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Does it sound like okay quality, Desmond? Are you happy with
that? That's his thumb saying yes.
All right. I'm going to go ahead and start to lead this conversation a little and just see if that does anything positive. But maybe it won't. And then I'll stop doing that. But I'm just going to try to steer the ship a little if you're okay with that, Adrian.
Oh, please. Yes.
Okay. So what I heard you say,
can you hear me?
Yes. Jesus Christ.
Is
somebody
in the building.
Put a gun in my mouth and just pull the fucking trigger. Okay.
Holy macaroni.
So you're friends with Sophia. You make songs. You've always been making songs. You have every single thing is about spirituality. Your mom in the womb had crazy dreams, and that was something to do with spirituality. And then can you say a little more words about, unless God is just going to fart at us again, which is fine. Go ahead, God. Can you say more words about, like, so what does that look like to you? And like, where did it start and what did it turn into? In other words, when you were a kid, were you like playing with runes and tarot, and then you started to meditate, and then it became this? Or like, tell us a little bit about the trajectory, if you can.
I guess the word spirituality is so broad, is
yes,
it not?
I mean, it is.
For me, it's a good word to encompass a lot of things. And the reason I brought the thing up about my mom is just that, you know, I was introduced to that idea of reincarnation at a really young age, and it always just made complete sense to me. And I'd say that concept just you know, my parents were not religiously, I had no religious structure as a child, and which was really great for me because I had so much that I wanted to explore. And it was really more just, you know, in man, summarizing all of that in to people that I've never met before, I would say like, I just had a really deep, constant internal relationship and conversation with what I now call God, but then would and still call like my friend, you know, like just a friend that's just been really just as I've developed this relationship with my friend, you know, it's like my friend is my true self, you know. And when I was 18, I had the experience of, and it's incredibly like vulnerable to share this in like a public context, and I'm sort of wondering if I should, but I guess I should.
Well, if it helps you at all, that's the nature of what we do here. Like people come on and they share their soul and share their deepest truths, and we get incredibly vulnerable every week. And, you know, if when I'm opening the Akashic records of someone, it's me like merging with their soul and talking to God and stuff. So we're pretty intimate here. So we wouldn't push you to say anything you don't want to say, but you're certainly welcome to let it all out.
Yeah, I guess I'll just thank you.
That
is helpful. When I went to India when I was 18, and that was one of my many callings, you know, when I was a kid, was I really wanted to go to India, and you know, the story is really deep and really amazing. And you know, all the things that led to me going and sort of the epiphanies that I had of, you know, just seeing us all as light and recognizing that we're all one in the way that a 16-year-old can like, you know, have that. And then also still just like be a teenager. I wasn't like God realized or something in that moment. It was just, oh shit, you guys, like we're all one. This is incredible. Like you're light, I'm light. Like that fucking loser over there is light. We're all light. I love everyone. You know, it's just, that was kind of my personality as a young person. And I think that was honestly like preparation for me going on this journey to India and, you know, tying it in with my musical life. When I was in high school, I had a guitar teacher who was a devotee of Meher Baba, who's a spiritual master.
I know a lot about him. Yeah.
You do?
Yeah. Buck Busfield is a follower of Meher Baba.
My God.
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay.
For the listener, Buck Busfield is an artistic director of a theater, but not anymore, actually. He's not there anymore, but he started and ran forever the B Street in Sacramento.
He's not there anymore?
No, he left. Lindsay, what's her name, took over.
Oh, Lindsay. Wait, that must have been so recent.
Birch, yeah. A couple years ago, yeah.
I just performed at the Sophia, like, did a concert there. Yeah, I've known Buck for so many years.
Yeah, Meher Baba guy.
Oh my God, Meher Baba, yay! Okay, well, that's my deal.
Okay.
That was just all leading to that. It's like,
okay.
I was really close with my, you know, my teacher, and she invited me to go with her to India because I had wanted to go, and she'd been so many times and now actually lives there. Yeah. And they invited me to go with her after my first year of college. And
what were some of the things that happened for you in the Meher Baba lineage that sort of amazed you or blew your mind or made you become a devotee or a follower or a believer?
Baba lover.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was really simple. And has been a lifelong journey since then. That was 20 years ago. I mean, there are all of those build-up things that I described, you know, like felt like they were kind of opening the door for me in my heart. And I, you know, went on this journey. We started in Thailand, and I had this, I'd say that like one thing that was important to me at that time was that I didn't want and wasn't seeking a religion. And I had no interest or inclination towards any spiritual master. It wasn't even something that I thought about or just I desired in any way. And just never, I went to Catholic school, but I liked going to, you know, mass and all these things just because of the experience of connectedness. But I just really didn't like religion. It just did not speak to me. And I felt that I had a connection with Jesus, but that it was just interrupted by all of the ritual and just restrictiveness and oppressiveness, honestly. Like, my soul just wants to be in total union and connection with God in any way that it wants to happen, and feel totally like it's you and me, babe. Like, that's how I want to feel. And that's how I want everyone to get to feel. And I just, you know, religion doesn't often enable that.
Yeah. In my world, you're describing the difference between religion and mysticism. So mysticism is where the individual becomes unified directly with the oneness without an intermediary. And religion is when there's a set of dogma and teachings and rules about how to do so. But it's often not really about being unified at all, which is what the mystic is after. It's about power and control and domination.
Yes. Yes. And when I want to respond to that, because that is like Baba's, you know, Meher Baba's teaching is so much centered around, you know, I have not come to establish any religion. I have come to bring all cults and religions together like beads on a string.
Mm-hmm.
And I am on his tombstone in, you know, we say he dropped his body in 1969, it says there, I have not come to teach, but to awaken.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened to me when I was 18 was, you know, I had this experience of going through these Buddhist temples in Thailand, and for the first time feeling this collective energy bowing down to a statue actually felt inviting to me. Mm. And I had never experienced that before. And I thought, maybe I'm a Buddhist. Maybe I'll be this religion. Maybe this is for me. Mm-hmm. I like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not knowing any of the whatever, all of the ritual and dogma that's like wrapped up in all of that too. But I said that to my teacher, Cindy, and she responded by saying, I said, I feel like I'm on a spiritual pilgrimage. And she said, she looked at me really intensely. And this was like the first moment that things got really intense about Meher Baba. She said, Adrian, your spiritual pilgrimage hasn't begun. And then like, I was like, what? Like, are you talking about? And then she, you know, I don't know how it kind of transitioned, but then she was just told me this and that about Meher Baba, and that Meher Baba is the avatar, and he is the one soul that comes again and again. And he has come as this form and that form, as Jesus, as Buddha, as Ram, and now he's come as Meher Baba. And you know, then I was like, oh shit, I'm in a foreign country with a bunch of people who are in a cult. And I was genuinely like this. I mean, I felt a little scared, but I also was just open, you know, because I was probably, yeah, I just didn't have that discernment. I had like, I really had no expectations, but I did feel like that's not true. And this is weird. But I mean, that was my mind. My heart was like still open, because then we're on an airplane going to India, and, you know, went to all these, ended up in a town called Pune, which is where Meher Baba was born. We went to visit some of the sites that were significant to his life and his spiritual awakening. And we ended up in this one place, which is called Guru Prasad Memorial, which is, Guru Prasad was a, like this big mansion where he used to, like some, the Maharani of Pune, or I can't remember her name exactly, like who she was, but she would lend them his house so that he could see all the people who wanted to come and have his darshan and meet with him. And they would spend like, you know, many months there visiting with people. And so it's just has a lot of charge and energy, but the house was eventually demolished, but they left this one tiny little plot of land with a memorial room where people could go in and still basically have darshan or visit this space where Meher Baba used to spend so much time. And when I arrived there, you know, after the information that Cindy had given me and everything and all my feelings about what the hell was happening and being in India, which is just like, oh my God, like stimulation overload, like never experienced anything like that. Like, it's just so everything all at once.
I've been there. It's amazing.
It's incredible. And it's exactly where I wanted to be. And I was so also just like, where the hell am I? But, you know, walk up the stairs to this threshold of the small room, you know, this little garden, and just looked at this picture across on the other side of the room. And it was just this like poster, like a foam cord poster hanging on fishing wire on the wall, like, you know, like rocking side to side, you know. And I just saw Meher Baba's face. I just saw his face. And it was, I, you know, every time I recount the story, I just get to go back to that moment. Mm. And it is so wonderful. It just feels so good to be there again.
Did you have so I take it there was like a heart activation when you saw his face?
I saw his face there. I'm sorry, I was just like in it. I stopped talking. Yeah. About the story. Yeah, I saw his face, and it's just really, my experience was, you know, that time sort of stopped. And like the way that I remember it is like almost like being in the cosmos. Mm-hmm. Suddenly, just me and that image of Baba. And yeah. I think I must have just felt him there. And I asked him, I said, "Are you who you say you are?" Mm. And when I asked that question, guys, it was so beautiful. I asked that question, and the word "you," it's like I knew exactly who I was talking to. Mm. I was talking to my friend. I was talking to my companion that had been with me my whole life.
Yeah.
And I felt this, like, in the silence, you know, I heard, like, the answer is in your question.
Right.
It was like, I am here. I am the one that you've been talking to and that you've been looking for and didn't even know. And that was the beginning. And I mean, you know, I've had so many incredible moments of, you know, just deep clarity about and with Baba, you know, but that moment is really like has grown so strong for me. It's something I lean on in times of just feeling lost and full of doubt and fear and about everything in my life. But I'd say like that was just like the beginning of this journey that just is colored so beautifully for me. And then when we eventually ended up at the Pilgrim Center, which is not like a, you know, regular ashram where there's like wake up every day and you do these things and this is what you do and you do these prayers and you do this meditation. It's very much like come spend all day at the Samadhi, where Baba's tomb is, do whatever you want, eat when we have meals, come and listen to people sing or talk, or it's very open, visit Baba's home, you know, that just that was really helpful for me because it was like, you know, not, I was very, you know, I'm like anxious, like now I love this person in an instant. I'm like, oh my God, this is my life now. I felt it in an instant. It was so obvious. And I was a little bit like still piecing it together. And when I landed there at the Pilgrim Center, there was a quote up on the wall. There's a bunch of Baba quotes. And the first one that I saw and will always remember is, "Above all else, trust the dictates of your own conscience." Mm. Even over anything I say, trust the dictates of your own conscience. Mm-hmm. And that was like, that was it for me. That was like the, you know, 24 hours later. And I'm like, okay, if I can love you and like have this relationship with you and, you know, just get to still follow my own intuition and that's what it means, then I'm down. And that's just basically, that's my deal.
Well, I love it. I understand every word you're saying. I have, if you ever get a chance or if you're ever pulled to listen to this podcast in the earlier days, you can hear more of my story, which is very, very similar. Mine was with a Sufi master named Sidi Al-Jamal. Just the dying and the dissolving into the oneness just in an instant. And he knew my name from 3,000 miles away and magic and miracles and lots of it. So I very much hear you. I very much get it. I love it. I love learning more about Mir Baba. Thank you for sharing all that. Again, knowing Buck and I had a lot of conversations where I was like dying to the light while doing plays at the B Street. So we could like pull each other aside and I could just sort of stand near Buck and he could say Mir Baba and we could go cha-chunk and just drop in to that space.
It's so awesome.
It's pretty great, isn't it? I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Gosh, I have a lot of thoughts on that, but it's nice to meet other mystics on the path. So
That's awesome. Thanks for saying that and seeing that. And, you know, it's like, I've spent my whole life, like as a musician, really confused about if I'm supposed to talk about Mihir Baba or keep it to myself. Cause it's so, I mean, Baba is my everything. Like everything is filtered through Baba, everything. And it's like, if you don't understand or have a sort of a proclivity, is that the word, towards that type of spiritual relationship, it can sound and seem really
crazy,
really crazy and really weird. And then it's like, okay, I don't want people to think I'm crazy, but I also don't want people to misunderstand Baba. And then I think as I've gotten older and my relationship with him and with this God force who is, you know, manifest in my experience as Meher Baba, but is also like formless, you know, is as it grows and I become more confident in like who I am, I guess, I care less because we're all going to die. And I just want to be honest about who I am. And I want to say Baba's name because Baba's the bomb, you know, Baba's the
rock on. You get older and you get willing to be yourself more fully.
Exactly.
Right? Because who gives a fuck anyway? You're making me think somehow about, you know, I just moved back to California. I was in California 20 years and we've taped most of the episodes. How many do we have now? 200?
170.
Wow, it's amazing.
We've taped them mostly while I've been in Colorado, New York, Florida, and now I'm back to the Bay Area where we started this. We started it right here. And now here I am full circle. I went on this Dorothy journey of the body, which is a whole other conversation. But you're making me think about, I have this partner, you know, my boyfriend who I moved back here and moved in with him, which is not a thing I've done before. I've always been very free spirited, following the light. The light took me to Colorado, New York, Florida. My sense of what God is was like, okay, now you go here, now you go there, now you go here. Okay, now you're going back. Oh, now you're going to move in with this guy, Eric. You know, like I just take direction and it's weird. But what I wanted to say about that is it's been very interesting to take a direction, to take a note from consciousness, to be with someone who is not at all a spiritualist.
Yeah.
He meditates. And when he meditates, he gets to these states of, I think he has like great access to the light. He's just not that interested.
Yeah.
He's got other shit going on. He's doing a different thing. And I have to tell you, in the Sufi language of things, they talk about life presents you with, or Allah or the oneness is always presenting us with our specific walking. So they say, what is your walking? Or what are you walking with right now? Is this lingo from that world? And being sort of like in love with and partnered with a person who like has no idea what I'm talking about and no access to the spaces I live from. My whole everything, as you said, is lived through the space of what I call consciousness at this point. It's changed a lot of times. But anyway, I've had a walking with it where I'm coming back to you in a second, I promise. But this is, you're making me think about it.
I like this. This is great.
Yeah. Like the first reaction, of course, is to get away, right? It's resistance. It's like, I'm this spiritual thing and you can't see me.
Right.
And so fuck you and separation. Like go away from me because you can't see me as I want to be seen or as I am, right?
Right.
And there's this threat to the ego. If you can't see my spiritual connection, well, then you must be in judgment of it. Or if you can't see my spiritual connection, then I'm threatened somehow because does it exist if you can't see it? And you say you love me, but you don't see it. Anyway, all this work I've been doing over the past like year and a half has been peeling into energetically, clearing the layers of that, where I was being pulled now back to this person who I've dated before, who I just have this long-term powerful connection with, and who is like a very good human, who is like when you look at the qualities of like, what's good in a partner? Like just for a Katie Rubin animal, it's that person. Aww. It's very obvious, right?
Yeah.
Except that I couldn't get past, like we don't share the most essential thing. And finally, a few months ago, I was in the records and I talked to God all day, every day, just like you. And I'm always like, but is it this? Is it that? And I get these yeses and nos and it's very distinct. It was like, you have to be with that which is not you so that you can fully embrace and have no separation from anything. In other words, God to me, God consciousness, love, oneness is about, Sidi used to say, separation is the only enemy, but it's only an enemy if you separate from it.
Wow.
right?
Love
that. Yes. Like if you think of any part of ourselves that we're ever in judgment of, it's because we've separated from it. We've said, that's bad. I'm over here and that's over there. So if non-spiritual guy is over there and I'm here, I am creating separation with him.
Yeah.
Because why? I'm so evolved and he can't see my big evolvedness.
Right.
Well, that's called spiritual righteousness.
Yeah.
That's what everybody in the religions is doing that we all of the mystical orientation dislike. Oh, I'm on my high and mighty priesthood and you have to talk through me to talk to God. Whereas the mystics go, no, I fucking don't. I'm over here on a rock in a bathing suit talking to God all day. Thank you very much. So what makes me so special that Earth guy is, who, by the way, is better at loving, connecting, communicating, supporting, nurturing, caring than I've ever been.
Yes.
Who's a kinder, gentler spirit than I'll be when I die. But I can't let him in because he doesn't get the light.
Yeah.
Like, what an arrogance. And so it's been so powerful for me to dissolve those layers of the heart and go, oh, I see. I get to merge with this being because this being loves me just unconditionally for some weird fucking reason. And I happen to love him unconditionally. So we do this merging thing, but every day with him is a walking around like this relationship with 3D reality.
Yeah.
Because he's so in the 3D in a way. That it's just, and his thing, I think this is actually quite deep. He says he was like a real spiritual dude when he was in high school and college and stuff. And he almost was going to go to a monastery and become a monk. But he has these talents. He's an incredible guitar player and bass player, which is partly what made me think of you. Anyway, so he was deeply studying Buddhism and learned all the 12 this and the 4 that, and he's got a big brain so he can understand all that, and he's very zen-y and whatever. He had a day where he realized, okay, so there's the Maya, all the things of this world, the phones and the sex and the jobs and the things, and then there's transcending that. And his thing is, I decided, like, well, if all these things are happening and I'm here in this form, I think I'll just get into all these things.
Yeah.
Right?
Hell yeah.
Now, Sidi Al-Jamal, our master, used to say, it's about getting into the things and then transcending them, but staying in them.
Yeah.
So the psychology version of that is transcend and include. So you go like, I'm a person and I have sex and I care about money and I want a pretty house. But also, like, God has to be making all that. Like, God is at the center of all of it. It's both.
That's right. Yeah.
And so Eric, this boyfriend person, he's the most both person I know. And he just doesn't have the language. He doesn't do the language or the doings or the, it's like, we talked about this a bunch of times on this podcast. Oftentimes the people I meet who call themselves atheists are the best spiritualists I know.
Right. They just are like high quality, kind people that like just want to treat people with respect and do a good job in life and be like moralistically like sound.
Correct. And they behave, whereas all the spiritualists I know are like cocky and arrogant and wearing their special beads and being specialer than you. And it's like
fucking beads, they're goddamn beads.
Your fucking beads and your robes and your hats.
Okay. Buying sage from the fucking Whole Foods. Sorry to anybody who does that.
Give me a break.
Looking at me like you do it better.
Yeah, just like, and everybody's got it right and everybody else is wrong. Whereas an atheist is like, nobody's right, nobody's wrong. Let's try to be cool with each other.
Well, then there's the atheists that are like, we're better than everyone.
Well, there's those. Yeah, there's You're totally right.
There's the cocksure absolutists and everything.
Exactly. But my point being, it's such a funny, ironic walking. I used to think like, I'll never find this perfect partner who's as on the same vibration as I am. And then I lived in Colorado and this journey I've been on, and I met Newman Manfredson, otherwise known as Alfred. And I had a boyfriend there, and he and I were the same vibration. He was Aquarius and Libra, and he was one of Dolores Cannon calls the new ones, where like some beings are just plucked from God and just show up in a body, and you give them like, in the Akashic records before they incarnate, the Akashic beings of light will give them like some pretend karma.
Whoa, that's cool.
Isn't that interesting? They like insert a little memory of karma so that when the being arrives in form on Earth, they don't completely just explode at the horror show of it. So that's this guy, Newman Manfredson. That's not his real name. And we dated, and I realized, we had a great time, and it was really nice to be with someone who his frequency felt like the frequency I'm always looking for in some man. Then I realized, like, oh, we don't need each other.
Right.
We don't need each other at all. And after a while, like, the sex thing went away and he felt like a brother. And then I realized, like, the light doesn't have to date the light. The light is the light. So, like, why are you dating nothing? There's nothing there. And it all died. And then we became friends. He's a lovely human. There's no bad feelings. Whatever. He's married now. It's all fine.
Wow.
But that was such... Did I ever tell you that?
No.
Oh, yeah. He got married like 9 months later.
Damn.
Whoa.
Yep. We broke up. He met a lady. And it was the woman who... You remember the story?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's a whole thing.
That's a whole story. It's like... It's almost like you need two opposing energies. Well, so this comes down to, now we get into the energetics of consciousness, because consciousness talks about, consciousness includes everything and judges nothing. So consciousness is the allness of all the things, but including duality and 3D and all that. But in the realm of conscious awareness, like for human beings to create anything, you have to have friction, right? Like if you think of like to make a fire, you got to rub sticks together and then sparks happen. You can't just be like the wind. And then fire. It doesn't, right. You don't just like, I am light. And then I made fire occur. No, I have to rub two things together. So friction happens so that fire can happen. Similarly, to have a relationship that is lasting, there has to be friction for there to be sexual chemistry, for there to be something you're building. Like if you build, there has to be like, there's no other word I can come up with, but a little bit of friction.
There. Yeah. Tension.
Tension.
Well, I mean, that's even in our relationship as a podcast.
Yeah.
If I lived at the exact same rhythm you did or had right. the same vibrations, we would have no conversation.
We'd have nothing to talk about.
We'd just be
about.
Like, yeah, I know, right?
Yeah, just sit silently in the oneness and be right. like, this
and
is neat.
I'm the one who doesn't, I don't share either of your experience.
Yeah.
I don't have the visceral experience of the oneness of the light. I've had some great philosophical explosions, but.
Philosophical explosions.
But we need that. Like that's even true with my relationship who I met because of this podcast. And she's woo-woo all the way, like all the way up the ladder. And she's always asking me, do you think I'm crazy or anything? Because she's having these experiences that I do not understand.
Right.
But it's not that I doubt them.
Right.
But I also don't, quote, believe them, because I don't not believe them either.
Mm.
I just go, sounds like a thing. Like,
right.
That's amazing.
Right.
I cannot say I get it.
Right.
Because I don't. And same with Eric. I'm sure he doesn't get it, but he accepts it and he receives it and he loves it.
That's right. I don't even know if he loves it, but he loves
you.
Me.
Yeah.
And so because he loves me, he can, he just goes, well, that's her world. He's very good at that. See, that's something I learned from him is it's like if this man who has no quote access to the light or whatever I call it, right, in my way, can love me as I am and take all that in and not be in judgment of it, which is separation. Who am I to separate from him because he doesn't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's so anyway, it's just arrogance. It's just a cool teaching and a set of walkings and who knows.
One thing that is coming up for me while you're sharing this is just like, you know, since we're talking about Meher Baba, is like Baba's, the practicalness of being a Baba lover is so real. It's like, it is not a path of
like that.
Dissociating, of living in a cave, of meditation. And I mean, Baba even just didn't recommend meditation for most people. I mean, he gave instructions about meditate, but Here's some rules that for like in 500 years when like you can't feel the avatar's presence at all anymore and you need to meditate, like this is how you should do it. But like basically it's all about love. It's all about service. It's all about like people who followed him, who were his closest disciples, they live sometimes with him. Some people lived with him for their whole lives, but that was like 10 people, and everybody else had jobs and had families, and some people would marry people that weren't Baba lovers. And that tension, it blossomed. The person who was the Baba lover grew in their love and connection with Baba because of that tension and friction. And like,
that's right.
You know, the real God consciousness and the real love in all of us doesn't actually care, because we're all actually one, and we're all actually just This is just God having all of its experience through each of us. And God needs to have the experience of not thinking about itself all the time. And also the experience of like being totally obsessed with itself. You know, like I feel like God came in me and is like, okay, let's be like totally obsessed with me. Right. Like, God, I'm amazing. I'm God. Like, oh my God, I love you, God. Like, that's like what's happening. You know what I'm saying? And like,
yeah,
I just think it's all right. And one of the things that I tend to not like, definitely when I was 18 and found out about Meher Baba, I was just like, what the hell? I don't want to, what is this life? I want to live in a fucking monastery. What is this? And for me to like have this going home experience of being in Maribod and Baba's tomb and like, this is where I belong. This is where I come from. I'm from this place. I'm from these people. This is my home. I want to live here. And then just know so intensely that it's not where I'm supposed to live.
Right.
And feel multiple times in my life that I have been, I mean, it feels violent, like thrown into this life of,
yeah.
Because, and it's like so beautiful that we're talking about this because it's just like, so God, just feel the warm embrace of like my life and of God. Like I'm here to learn about this experience of being humbled. How dare I think I should get to just not do the thing, you know, that is being asked of me to do, which is to engage in life and care about all the stuff that is actually meaningless and try to like make a living and be a good daughter and sister and wife and auntie and like fucking clean up after myself. You know what I'm saying? Like what I'm learning how to do. And like, I mean, I could just sit and play songs and be like, hey, listen, everybody, I just wrote an awesome song. Aren't I awesome? And like, I just feel like there's this, like this other thing that's more important. And with Baba, this is another word that sometimes, you know, people have a more kind of Western mindset. I shouldn't say Western. I should find another like word for it, but like the word is obedience. Obedience is very hard for us to comprehend as like a valuable thing. It feels like control, but it's not that. It's like, you know, the way Baba talks about it, it's like, you know, love is wonderful. Service is wonderful. But what's more important than all of those things is actually obedience. Because when you really think about it, it's like, you don't actually know what you need and who you are.
That's right.
Really.
That's right.
So if you learn how to, like you were saying, like obey those messages of I go here, I go there.
That's the deal.
Then you're in a relationship that makes sense. Because like, you know what I'm saying? Like I can't trust my mind to tell me what's right. That's literally makes me feel like nutsy cuckoo crazy pants. So which is also, I should come up with another word for that too. That's like more.
Well, here's some other language for it, just to give you the sense of how much I understand what you're saying. In the 12-step programs, they talk about, we are undisciplined people, so we let God discipline us. Mm-hmm. So I embarked on a journey through Sufism to understand what the fuck that sentence meant.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to understand was, what is a third step? The third step, I turned my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand God.
That's right.
What the fuck does that mean? So I endeavored to find out. And I found out, and it's weird. But it's working.
Yeah.
It's working pretty damn well. And it's a pretty interesting ride, that's for sure. And I have no idea where it's going. And that makes it a lot more interesting and a lot more peaceful. There's like all this peace.
That's what I'm trying to do. Yes. The peace on the other side of realizing that you are not actually the one that's supposed to be in charge of your shit.
Like, that's the deal.
You know, and I think that like, I think sometimes about past lives, I try not to think about them too much because I can, you know, kind of get distracted. But like, you know, I could have been some spiritual, mystical leader, master, teacher at some point in some past life thinking I was really hot shit. You know what I mean?
Right.
And telling everybody what to do and thinking that I knew what was right. And I could have actually had like an expansive consciousness that did see a lot and was really tuned in and was really like advanced. But maybe I didn't. I mean, I don't know if this is really what happened, but this is something that does happen. I'm using this gift to manipulate others or to not be vulnerable or to not be in surrenderance to God, to feel like I don't need God because I have it all inside myself, like in my brain.
Yeah, spiritual superiority.
Yeah, I'm just not interested in that this time around. And
I hear that.
I hope that I don't have to do that.
Yeah, 1,000,000%. I think we could talk a long time about how, and I end up talking about this in a lot of the classes and with the clients and stuff, about why surrender is not disempowerment.
Yeah.
Like, surrender is not, I now am the hole in the donut and I'm just this doormat and whatever. There's a real paradox inside of surrender, which is that I'm more empowered than ever through my surrender. But that's a big, long conversation for people to grok, because our world lives from the mind. And so the mind can't.
Especially here, because we're so independent. It's so much about my autonomy as an individual. It's like being maybe in Indian society, like it's more natural to like this concept. Or I mean, I shouldn't just say just India, but there's so many different types of societies in the world. But our kind of, you know, whatever Anglican.
But what I find is that the more the surrender there is in the being, the more autonomy I have. It just doesn't seem like it'll be that way when you step into it.
I love that.
It's like you step off a cliff and then you're like, well, I could die now, but then you're flying.
Yeah.
But you can't know you're going to fly until you step off. So why the fuck would you ever step off? For me, I had to step off out of desperation and pain. It was like the only option, which is why they always talk about another thing in 12-step recovery is they talk about like people who don't have a ton of trauma or a ton of pain don't have to step off the cliff. They don't have to find an entirely new way to live. Like I found the doorway for me was through suffering and necessity. I love hearing a story like yours where it was like, well, I just loved it. I just fell in love with Baba. Yay, now God. That's so not my experience, but I love that experience. Like, what a beautiful, gentle way in. My God. I give you credit for staying on the path when you didn't have to out of desperate need and pain.
I mean, I wouldn't. Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of pain in my life that I just didn't know that would alleviate my pain.
Exactly.
And you know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's how we find it. I hate to do this, but I do have to wrap up for today because I have to get on a thing soon and we've kept you long enough, but I feel like we could have you back and talk for a long, long time if you wanted to come back. We are going to take a file from you and play one of your singles here. Net, we'll edit this in some amazing way right now.
And now we're going to hear a song from Adrian Shamzat.
My love in a sacred place, floating like an otter out beyond the waves. The sparkle in his eyes called out to mine. I became an otter too, so we could play. I say my prayer, I will go with you anywhere. You're my blood, you're in my skin, and I wanna dive all the way in. All in. to my ear. My love, I'm not going anywhere. You're my blood, you're in my skin. So I made a deal with love, and now she's gonna let us in.
And so we're playing it as a little teaser for folks who live here in the Bay Area to go see Adrian play live when, where?
I'm playing at the Freight and Salvage on August 31st. I am playing with my band, my album, and also I do Iranian traditional music and have created like a sort of a new just expression of that. And then also have like my singer-songwriter, soul, rock songs that are a part of my album. And yeah, and I am really excited. Yeah.
Awesome. So the show at Freight and Salvage will be all of that or a part of that, or?
That's what the show is. Yeah. The show is like really just like the invocation with my Iranian music. And then my album will be kind of in the center of that. And then yeah, wrap it up with more. It kind of makes sense when you're in the space.
And does your Mayor Baba stuff show up in that actively or more subtly?
Well, yeah, I mean, I would love to actually talk about my music, but it doesn't seem like we have time for that.
We don't really have time. It's true.
Not today, which is why maybe we'll have you back. But can you tell people a website they can go to look at your stuff, listen to your stuff, hear you?
Yeah, my website is adrianshamsaat.com, and my album will be out on Bandcamp on September 1st. You can actually buy a CD at my show if you want to come to my show on the 31st, and it'll be streaming on all the streaming places on September 15th. And I'm on all of the Instagram and Facebook places and the TikTok. I got on TikTok also. And I just very briefly, yeah, like my music is my life journey and my journey through being a human. And I'd say in all honesty, you know, all of my songs are either an exaltation of or a conversation with, you know, with God, and hoping for that to be an offering to other people. And,
it is indeed.
Yeah.
You're the best. We love you. We're going to hop off really fast because I have weird things I have to go do. We love you so much. I hope you'll come back so we can talk more about
your
music.
Yeah, let's just make another date and we'll take it farther. We'll go into your records. We'll do the other stuff.
Okay, you guys.
All right.
Sounds good.
Thank you, Adrian. And thank you for your spiritual farts.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
What are you asking for? All of the answers? Say what? All of the answers? Yeah, all the answers.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Please email us with your questions so that we have questions to answer in the Akashic Records. Our email address is allanswerspod@gmail.com. That's allanswerspod@gmail.com. And if you'd like to find us on Facebook or Twitter, it's @allanswerspod, @allanswerspod. Thank you.
Everything's gonna be all right. Rock-a-bye.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.
He's just sniffing my sweater.